We were making up this method as we were going along.
I got the tape recorder set up.
Dave, come on, man. Open up. I think the cops...
Dave's not here.
Already on the Billboard charts.
The movie comes out. It's a giant hit. Giant.
It's not hard to see what drugs do to you, you know.
Make you rich. Well, you...
But money and success might spoil them.
You still won't grow your mustache back.
You drive me nuts!
We're no longer partners.
Nothing lasts forever, Tommy. Could nothing lasts forever.
Hi, everybody. How are you today? This is Mark Chaffardini. Thanks very much for coming back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. I'm spacing it out because I'm trying to have bated breath and show reverence and respect for the man we're about to speak to, director, producer David Buschel. He has brought one hell of a documentary to our eyes, our ears, our souls, and the otherworldly nonsense where Cheech and Chong live. David Buschel directed Cheech and Chong's last movie, fantastic documentary that you should seek out, whether or not you like cannabis. But David, thank you oh so much for being on the show. How are things in your world?
Things are good in my world. It's nice to have the movie kind of set free and making its way. And the response has been, I think, favorable. So that's always exciting when you put something out there and people want to talk about it. They're reacting and they're not throwing eggs at you.
Many vaudeville acts would agree with that. Yeah. But, you know, this seems like a passion project. It's almost as like a dream project. It's, you know, how long have you been in the Cheech and Chong fold and been wanting to help them tell a story?
Well, I got contacted to produce a narrative straight comedy many years ago. And when that didn't happen, it turned into this. And I met Robbie Chong, Tommy's daughter, my producing partner, who was a big influence on getting the guys together after not speaking for a long time. And before the whole craze of documentary, and when that narrative feature didn't happen and Tommy went to prison, I said, no one's made the kind of consummate Cheech and Chong documentary. We talked about it for a few more years and then eventually asked the guys. They were game. I always wanted to... you know, I came up as a producer. I had this other thing that I wanted that I co-wrote and was going to direct. And it just kind of naturally progressed. And you're right. It very much is a passion project. And we poured a lot of heart and soul into it and didn't want to be the guys that fucked up the Cheech and Chong documentary. So hopefully we pulled it off.
You did the latter and not the former, and fans across the world rejoice. But, you know, it really is a tremendous experience because you do get the backstory. You do get a look into their mentality and also how they are, you know, after the sort of Cheech and Chong craze died down and they split because of their personal differences. And what was, you know, besides Robbie, what was the sort of catalyst to say, you know, now is the time to tell?
I always thought it was interesting to kind of lift the veil on who we thought they, who we think they are and who they really are. Because, you know, there's parts of their being that are those characters, but there's so much more. And that was something that was really interesting to me. And when I learned about the natural conflict, I thought, well, that's a third act engine right there, right? And I watch a lot of nonfiction and often see great stories not greatly told. And coming from a narrative background, I was hoping, you know, maybe I can kind of push on the genre a little bit and make it a little bit more expansive and dynamic than people sitting on couches talking about the old days and cutting to archival footage. So that's kind of the collage and the ambition. And then, of course, people have been waiting for a Cheech and Chong movie, so I was hopeful that if we can get them together in a car in the desert, that maybe it would feel like we got caught in a 15 or 20 minute Cheech and Chong movie while taking this ride and learning their, you know, wildly empathetic, crazy individual and stories of their life and career.
You sure we're going the right way?
We're in the middle of fucking nowhere.
No, we're southwest of fucking nowhere. We're not in the middle yet.
And you know what you said was very apropos about not just going to archival footage, because we've seen that before, but it's nice how they sort of intersperse things about their their upbringing, things they were influenced by, and even elements that true stories that happened to them that actually became parts of their movies, like the part with the windshield wipers. That was in Things Are Tough All Over. And so it's nice to see sort of the genesis, and you know, hearing a character like Strawberry becomes a catalyst for, you know, one of their most most enduring mannerisms. So all that stuff is extremely fascinating.
I think it's also like the improvisational nature of the guys and their act and using what's around them that Tommy talks about and they both talk about, which, you know, it's not only Cheech and Chong. We all draw from our life experience and write what you know. But to kind of learn certain parts of their act or their movies and where and the origins is, they're like, I guess you call them Easter eggs of, oh, wow, you know, that's where this came from. And I could see the influence there or how they carried that forward from their records to their movies. And so I'm glad that you caught on to that stuff.
So is this a documentary or a movie?
I don't know, man.
All we can do is be funny.
And it's also, I would say cute is probably an understatement, but it's charming because I grew up with Cheech and Chong. I mean, that first album of theirs with, you know, Dave's Not Here, I grew up with my parents. We'd fall out of our chairs laughing. And
you have no gray hair. I don't believe you.
Oh, I'll get a little closer. You know, Sanchez of San Fernando and the Kamikaze Pilots and all that stuff is great. But
and you must have really hip parents because that's great that they turned you on.
Yeah, but between that and George Carlin, I think I learned way too much too early. But I'll send them your regards. But again, it's fascinating to see how their mind worked because you know when they were doing the sort of dog act and just the you know like the we overcame all these things. You know they're completely wild, and I think they said in the documentary that there's like real high concept. It's extremely high concept, but how? How it's in your mind lifting the veil? How does like the drug angle work? Did you talk about writing high but performing sober, or do you perform high?
I think they talk about it. That I mean, I don't want to give too much away, and I'd rather people kind of take from it. But as I say, you know, they are those characters, but they're so much more. I mean, if you say, well, do they smoke weed? Do they love weed? Yes, they do, very much. But there's a lot more to that. And I think we'd have to drill down on specifics. But, you know, generally speaking, making movies is hard work. I mean, you can't really, be too far under the influence for too long on anything and get stuff done, you know. Plus, I think the art of it is to be able to act that way, right? It doesn't mean that you weren't inspired when you or someone else was under the influence, but I think in a lot of ways you'd have to speak to them. In the movie, it's a little bit happenstance. You know, Cheech and Chong are a product of the times, and they were willing to kind of say things that nobody was willing to say, and it was... But everybody was doing it. And Cheech says in the movie, we essentially stole third base because everybody was smoking dope, but nobody was talking about it. And they thought it was, you know, low hanging fruit when in fact, this is what everybody was, what a lot of people, especially young people were into. It, you know, you're talking about a product of the late 60s and early 70s where things were a lot different, but, they were shunned. They weren't really able to get on TV. It's ironic that where we are now with cannabis and it being legal in all the states and Madison Avenue and the medicinal aspects. So, they're ahead of their time and they're kind of like nothing else.
Am I driving okay? Back in the day, comedians weren't respected.
And we weren't afraid to get gross with them. Hey, this is what they really laugh at.
What do we call ourselves?
Richard and Tommy? No.
Tommy and Dick? No.
Cheech and Chong.
That was it.
You're against culture, but then once everybody's doing it, it's not cool. It loses that effect, mystique. But going back to what you said about directing movies is hard, and you know what I thought was very interesting about the film is how it showed Tommy Chong's focus on directing and how he wanted to have the control and have that vision and kind of how that's, you know, that in conjunction with how albums sort of ended and movies began, you know, like how your creative differences find their way through the times. Because like you said, making movies is hard. So as a producer and a director, I guess, what kind of similar challenges do you face? I know you said this took a while to go from sort of a narrative to a documentary, but really big, more grapefruit opportunity for you to just tell about, you know, this crafting this.
I watch a lot of nonfiction. I had a narrative feature that I co-wrote and I was going to direct. You know, getting the first seed money to acquire the archival, and kind of, it was still on cinder blocks in the backyard, so to say, but we were able to get started. And, you know, between acquiring the archival, they both had a book, so reading the book, and then sitting down for 30 hours of interviews, those portrait, I call them the white psych interviews of them individually, which are kind of testimony, which serves the purpose of, both of them being able to tell their own side. But as a filmmaker, you know, where are they similar? Where are they different? What are great stories that it's unfortunate we don't have pictures or any archival, specifically when they first met? And, oh, well, maybe that could serve as animation. And then always knowing in the back of my mind that I wanted to do something with scope, and that was, quote, theatrically worthy, you know, although things have changed and people are going to the theaters differently and we have all these other options at home, and ultimately it'll live its life 90% on streaming services or more than that, actually. I wanted to make something that was a little bit more expansive than a conventional doc. So knowing that we all wanted to see them behind the wheel of a car, I did it in parts. So first it was acquiring the archival, then it was getting the portrait interviews. You know, you're cutting stuff together from there, you're plugging in holes. I always knew that I wanted to do the desert because I felt like that was what kind of distinguished it from a conventional doc. And that was one of the hardest parts, was getting the money and asking people to believe in the dream of the desert. And anybody that was creative was like, you have to shoot the desert. And the convention was, why don't you just like interview Snoop Dogg and Adam Sandler talking about how great they are, and then cut to archival bits, and then cut to Tommy and Cheech, and then have them on. And I was like, I'm not interested, really, you know? It sounds like something that's really fit for TV. So the desert gave it scope. And the guys were game. And then I ran into James Blagden, who's the animator, who had just moved to California from Brooklyn. And I don't know if you've seen his doc or his mini doc on Doc Ellis, the guy that pitched a no-hitter on LSD in 1970, whatever, but it's brilliant.
Wow.
And when you see that, you'll say, oh, yeah, that guy would be perfect to kind of take on Cheech and Chong. So he was one of the first hires. And, you know, are we going to animate their bits? Are we going to animate the stories? Which stories are we going to animate? You know, all that stuff. And unlike narrative, where you write a script and you prep the film, you shoot the film and you remake it in post, you know, 60, 65% of your movie's already shot when you make documentaries. So you kind of start the process in post-production and organization and starting to kind of put the pieces together. So that's kind of how it came about. But it was it was kind of, it's always man, man or person against the elements, whether it's getting the money or, you're out there and you're shooting a movie in the snow, or, Eternal Sunshine is, winter in New York, challenging with not a big budget. But a lot of the time, I always, because I came up in the 90s movement, the artistry is kind of in the economy of things. So if you use the limitations for inspiration, right, you kind of get through it. But it'd be a lot easier if, people were cutting checks for, meaningful projects, and independent film wasn't so much on the skids as it is. And but times are changing, and there's other opportunities that'll open up. But I hope I answered your question.
Oh, you did. You gave me a whole lot to work with, especially, you mentioned the 30 hours of interviews. I was watching the Pee Wee documentary, which they said that took about 40 hours, which was also funny to to learn that some of Pee Wee's character came from his boyfriend at the time, and the mannerisms were developed from that. But
And
when you
Cheech and Chong put, like, he
correct.
Tommy and Cheech, they put him in a next movie, and that was, I believe, his first, his first, I don't want to say they discovered him, but they definitely were first in on that.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, I saw them all when I was a kid. So I went from the records to the movies, and
That's
yeah, I
great.
think the last thing I saw was Things Are Tough All Over. There's just something about that that really speaks
I
to me.
want to know what your parents think of the movie.
Of this movie, they have not seen it, but that's my recommendation to them.
I hope that they'll see, and maybe you can send us an email, just totally honest what they, because really, as I said, half jokingly, you don't want to be the guy that fucked up the Cheech and Chong movie. So really, I wanted Cheech and Tommy to be happy with the film, of course, because I don't think the movie really pulls any punches, and we kind of go there. But also obviously the fans, right? So hopefully we get the core fans, which so far I think they've responded favorably, and then open it up to new generations, and they're a little bit of the rite of passage for the youth. So I'm hoping that they embrace the film as well.
Well, I really think that as sensitive as the culture can be, I still think that when what you said speaks volumes about pulling no punches. I think the honesty is actually something that's going to result in a better product than playing it safe. Because there's this one line in the movie where, it is as simple as it is, the format of Cheech on a white screen and Chong on a white screen. But I like how they're off balanced. It's like a one-third, two-third proportion. But when Tommy says, it's funny how two people can have two different memories of the same experience, I just love that. And that just manifests so many questions about our own psyche, how we take things in, and how they respond to stimulus and things in their life.
Well, the movie's a love story at its core, between the two guys. I mean, if these guys didn't do movies and they just conquered stand up and records, they had a stellar career. The fact that they went on and did all these movies afterwards, and their personalities, it's very yin yang.
I never met anybody quite like him.
It's very painful sometimes. Ow! But he's my best friend.
It's yin and yang, Cheech and Chong.
All that stuff that happened, why don't we just let it go?
Right? So it's, and he said, one's passive, one's aggressive, and that's why it works. There's that kind of friction that plays so well off it. So any 50-year union, and that's where the empathy comes in. There's going to be ups and downs and in betweens. And again, when you talk about taking the risk, first of all, you have to have willing subjects, which I really commend them because they were totally game. And they let me push them. And they didn't know what I was doing. I describe it as like, lighting a pack of firecrackers and running sometimes, or poking them with a fork to, but they were trusting, and they always showed up, which allows you to get it, hopefully. And if you get it, now you just have to not fuck up putting it together. And how do you do it? What I always like is when a movie is kind of leading me, and that the movie's either in front of me or in real time. If I'm ahead of the movie, then that's when I start looking at my watch, or I start kind of rustling around because I know what's happening, what's about to happen. And that's one of the things about certain documentaries that I kind of shake my head at, because you've got this, it could be a really great story, but it just feels contrived and expositional. And I think it's great to know the information, but it's a visual medium. So can't you we, you know, expand a little bit and not be provocative for provocative sake or self-aware, but is there a way to
Well,
elegantly,
both work.
you know, present information in a way, and that is engaging. And like you said, you know, hopefully you get wrapped up in it to a certain extent, and then you're reminded, oh, wait a second, you know, it's Cheech and Chong, these comedy icons. But for moments, you're like, these are the same agreements and disagreements and fucking around that I did with my high school buddies or my spouse or my business partner. You know, that was something that, as I kind of drilled down, there was an opportunity for empathy, which that word's kind of getting overused, but I think that's also where the honesty is the pathway to empathy. Because if it's not honest, you're not going to be able to relate, right?
Oh,
Or
sure.
maybe, or unless you want to, you're in denial and just, you know, it's, you live in sensationalism. But also you have to have a really, really good story. And they both have great backstories, and they have their life and career story together, which was, I thought, you know, I stepped in shit to a certain extent, and no one had done it.
And I'm glad you did, because there were so many things I didn't know, like the fact that Cheech wrote an interview with Richard Pryor, and Tommy had a musical career, and all these things, and how Shelby came into his life. I mean, these things that you would expect those to be by the numbers, but you did it in a way that didn't feel, it felt out of the blue. The time when Lou just shows up and gets in the car, and then he talks to the camera. So there's that fourth wall breaking, and then there's the sort of sitcom of Cheech and Chong in the front seat. So it all worked in a way that it kept you guessing. And I have to guess at one thing. Two questions for you. What is the necklace you're wearing that Chong was wearing?
So, you know, Tommy, when Tommy went to prison, he wasn't allowed to be involved with any, well, actually, I don't even know. He's a big carver, right? Since he was a kid, they couldn't afford toys. So he would have to make his toys, and he started carving at a young age, and he just turned 87, and he's still carving, and he makes these, you know, bone necklace, or sometimes he'll make them out of shells or stones, horns, and he gifted me a couple of them, which was great.
Oh.
But they're Tommy Chong necklaces, and I'm told he doesn't give them out easy. So I feel lucky that he gave me a couple.
That speaks volumes. That's a tremendous honor. So, like you said, you did not fuck it up. But to sort of end the movie on a capstone, there is a picture of Cheech and Chong at the very end of the credits. I don't believe I've seen it before. How was that decided on? Who had the input?
Well, I, you know, we went, we found, we scanned 8 or 9,000 pictures, and in a lot of ways, because you know, there's a little bit of a husband and wife thing with these two, and I just, it's from the prime, it's from the very beginning, and they look like they love each other, which I know they do. And like any 50-year union with a sibling or a wife, you know, there's a lot we go through. And I don't know if you have any brothers or sisters, but if I sat down and I interviewed you guys individually, there'd be stuff you agree on and stuff that you don't agree on. And you'd both be hell-bent on certain things, whether it's something that your mom made that was, you know, a night at the dinner table, or when you guys were in high school or something. Yeah, I just feel like you kind of bring it back to the essence, to the beginning, which is these two guys that cosmically got together and went on this kind of rocket ship ride. And you got to remember that, you know, people weren't favoring minorities at that time. So they were definitely something new, half Chinese, half, you know, and Chicano comedy act that like the kids are going crazy about, while you've got, you know, Nixon era stuff going, and, you know, all through the war on drugs and Vietnam, and you know, a lot of serendipity of how they got together. And I think, I forget who said it, it may have been Robbie or it may have been Cheech, they fail up, you know? A lot of people, or they fall up, not fail up, they fall up. A lot of people fall down, they fall up, which is very Cheech and Chong.
Well, you know, as soon as we get done with this, I am going to send this to my parents. I'm going to gift them a physical copy. I'm going to support physical media. David Bushell, you have been an absolute delight. Everyone, check out Cheech and Chong's last movie for all the no-nonsense story behind one of the biggest comedy acts of all time. David, love to catch up with you again, but everyone, thanks, David, for your time, and we will catch you next time.
Cheech and Chong.
The old stone charmers.
Look how far we've come.